Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Back to another episode of the Ricky Henderson Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts, the GUAP. I'm your co-host, Alex Espinoza, with your co-host, Dr. Hal Gordon. And today we're with the two guys behind the two co-creators of the Summer of Cell documentary. I still don't know how this thing's ever going to be made, but we got Gabriel Colon and Jared Isham. They've been really hitting this A stuff hard since last summer, and so they have the Summer of Cell documentary and a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. But so as we're recording this, it's about Friday night, about 6:15, and earlier today the Oakland Roots and Oakland Soul have been approved to get their play their home games in 2025-2026 season. I think we got to start there, guys. Gabe, I see you're wearing a Oakland Roots hat. What do you think about the move, and how cool do you think that is for the city of Oakland that, you know, they got two teams there and everything, you know?
Exactly. I think it's great. I mean, it gives, you know, gives Oakland a way to show itself as a market for big teams. I mean, I actually didn't realize this till today. I was talking to Jorge about it, and he said that the numbers that the Roots pull is actually comparable to most it's like a top four or top 10.
Top 10 of Major League Soccer.
So like they pull a huge crowd. So to be able to do that in the Coliseum, what? How?
I think it was merchandising sales is what he's talking about. Top 10 of merchandising sales.
Okay. Well, immediately I'm out of the gate in the wrong direction. So. I was going to say, that's incredible. They like pull that many people to games. And, okay.
Cal State Hayward. Yeah.
Cal State Hayward. I guess MLS maybe is not doing as well as I thought as well. But okay, so merchandising may do really well. So, I mean, hopefully with the Coliseum site, it'll be a bigger stadium. They'll be able to get more people out for it. So hopefully they will be able to continue to build on Oakland sports.
And Jared, what do you think about that? I mean, in my view, it's funny. It's like since the A's are leaving and making their intentions known to go to Las Vegas, there's been kind of this renaissance of, you know, the Roots, the Soul, the Oakland Ballers, that I know the Town FC tried to get in there too, but what do you think about just this kind of Oakland sports renaissance that's kind of happening right now? You know,
I think it shows that there is definitely fan passion there, and you've got a fan base that is going to show up and support their local teams. I think a huge win with the fact that the Roots and Soul are in there, as opposed to someone like the Town FC or the Bay FC or whatever that might also be interested in playing in a venue like that, is the Roots and Soul are really good representations of community driven sports teams, and having partial ownership from the fans is an element that no other team at this point in Oakland does. And so it's good for the fact that a team like that is getting into the Coliseum, because they're focused on serving the community. I think that says a lot to other teams that maybe haven't done. There's a big bonus with the fact having a community focused sports team in the Coliseum. And not to mention that it also does sort of show who has leveraging power in other team negotiations that are happening
Guys,
right now.
I just want to say that I'm very excited about this. This is awesome. This is great. I got my from 2 or 3 years ago, I got my binding vote season shirt from Last Dive Bar. We finally had a binding vote. So just to in case anyone hadn't heard, I'm sure if you listen to this podcast, you're plugged into Oakland sports. So the what the vote is that for 2025, both the Roots and the Soul will be able to play inside the Coliseum. So they'll set it up like the old Raiders situation. And they'll be able to, I don't, they'll try and pack. It'd be great if they could, pack that stadium, right? Right now the Roots are getting they I think they have 5,000 people that they can put in their stadium up at Cal State Hayward. I think that they they sell out some games. Some games they're closer to 4,000 people there. But with that big stadium, with all that excitement, you're thinking, ooh, maybe 10,000 people a game is possible. And at that point, then you're like right at the top of USL. You're making a lot of money. You can spend more money on players. You can spend more money developing future plans. So I think the Malibu lot is still a possibility for the Roots and Soul. Maybe I'm not sure. I think the plan right now is maybe only 1 year in the Coliseum. It may maybe longer than that. There's still their medium term plan is going to be that Malibu lot. They want to build a 10 or 12,000, I think, person temporary stadium there, modular stadium that they'll just clean up afterwards. And then the long term is someplace downtown, a big stadium, pack it. If unfortunately we don't have promotion and relegation in this country, but if they can pack a big, if they build a big stadium and they pack that thing, I mean that's a lot of things down the road. But it's at a certain point MLS can't ignore you for so long. But and even at the end of the day, if you don't get, I the John Fisher, who still owns the Earthquake, the MLS may never want a competitor in the Bay Area. Fine, but it's for us. It's fun and it's bringing professional sports to Oakland. The other huge part of this is that right now the Oakland Soul are an amateur team, right? They're mostly college students, and they will be college students again this year, this season. So they're playing, these small other amateur clubs in the area. But USL has started a professional, sort of a competing professional tier one women's soccer league themselves. The Soul will be able to turn fully pro and be, then they'll be paying women to play for the Soul. It'll be professionals, who that's their job, and it'll be much bigger and much better for the Soul too. So really, really some exciting stuff.
Oh,
Really some
who owns
exciting
the
stuff.
Malibu lot? Is that something that's under the Coliseum, considered part of the Coliseum complex?
It is part of the Coliseum complex. It is, I believe, zoned for sports. But there, it, this is also the state of California. So there is just unending bullshit
Red
that you
tape,
have to accomplish, even for a temporary field. I think that they've still had a lot of trouble with, and it's at certain points in California, you can have all the politicians behind you. But the administrative state just says these are the rules, and the rules are expensive, and punishing, and long, and don't make any sense. So, I think that it's just taking them longer and longer to get everything approved. I think the county's always been the problem, but yeah.
I also heard that there's like an irrigation repair or something being done, and it goes straight through the Malibu lot, and that may also delay 18 months of construction because I have to finish that before they can get to the building. I heard that was potentially something, irrigation or lines or something or other. But if that's the case, that is 18 months is a big hiccup in timeline, so.
But at this point, I think the Roots and Soul, they're able to professionalize the Soul. The Roots are good. And, you know, furthermore, what, you know, this is an A's podcast. Furthermore, the city and county now, when we all know that Dave Cavill and John Fisher desperately want to keep the A's in Oakland for 3 years and then get them the hell out of 2025 to 2027 to collect their $200 million. You know, at this point, the city and county can say, you know, I mean, what they've been saying, you need us a lot more than we need you. We already got professional sports teams playing the Coliseum. What can you do for us?
Yeah. I mean, the two pieces of leverage that they keep coming back supposedly with is, oh, we'll allow the stadium to be used by these other teams. And that's not a piece of leverage. And then, you know, to say that we'll sell the Coliseum lot, I mean, they need that money anyways to build the Vegas stadium. So, you know,
yeah,
I think both of those points are completely null and void.
I'd love to hear you guys about two weeks ago or so dropped this long Twitter thread. When I read it, I thought a lot of it was very interesting. I thought I'm someone who is very anti-conspiracy minded. I don't like, I think most conspiracies are bullshit. You know, people are just, oh, I don't trust the government, you know, blah, blah. So there were some parts of that where I was like, I don't know. This is
the way that was like,
there's a lot of
possibilities, because like I'm not gonna sit here and say that any of those pieces, oh, I mean, now one of those pieces did come true, but
yeah. So why can you kind of start from the beginning, tell us what and just tell us how you came to all these insights about the Coliseum land, about Nate Miley, about the Roots, about Town FC, and also, like, you know, stuff has changed in the last 2 weeks. How has that changed what you think? So in case people haven't read this monster long Twitter thread, tell us what you've sort of uncovered.
So yeah, a few weeks ago we started getting some people telling us stories, and I'm not going to say who they were. But yeah, two individuals in particular started giving us some ideas of what was going on with Nate Miley, that he had been blocking, the vote for the Raiders practice facility, which seemed weird. I mean, the county needs money, so why would they block this team, the Roots, who is a beloved team, to not buy this piece of land? So we started looking into that. We started hearing
Nate Miley is the county.
He's on the county board. Yeah,
he's the Alabama County Supervisor. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
supervisor.
Just reelected. So
you know, that was really one of the things that like started this whole search, because we kind of went down some conspiracy theory rabbit holes for sure. You know, but in doing that, like, we started realizing that basically there were two groups that were really involved in trying to buy that piece of land. One of them being the Prologis, I think it's the name, and that is the group that that the Roots would be leasing the land from or utilizing the land from, working hand in hand with them. And then there was this other group, the Steam Factory Oakland. And we started looking them up, and it was like, what is this group? What, like, how are they trying to buy a $26 million piece of land, and what for? And their only thing was like, oh, we're trying to do STEM roots, education for kids. And it was like, how do you have $25 million to do this? So we looked further into the company. We ended up finding.
Wait, so you're talking. No, we're not talking about the Coliseum. We're talking about the Raiders, the old Raiders practice facility, which the Roots currently use as a practice facility.
Yeah,
the city hopes that when the World Cup comes to Santa Clara, that they'll be able to host a World Cup team based out of there. Okay.
It's in Alameda though. It's not in Oakland, so it's like a county thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's right next.
Right by the airport.
Yeah, exactly. So we started looking into this Steam Factory Oakland company and realized that it was this one guy who, there's only one guy, they did it in Las Vegas. They, what do you call it, incorporated in Las Vegas. So in Las Vegas, you don't have to, and people do that to incorporate in Las Vegas so that they don't have to reveal who the actual owners of the company are. They only need to say who the director of the company is. So we had one name, this guy, Anthony Heilig. Seems like a very nice guy. I actually don't even know if he has any knowledge of what he's gotten into. He did do STEAM or STEM programs in Oakland to get youth into STEM education. So, seems like a really stand-up dude. But it was weird because his company, eCubus, I think was the name of it, his old group that worked with kids. And that company, was a small company. They did a few things here and there, but they were never $25 million rich to be able to like buy this huge practice facility. So it seemed a little strange, and it definitely seemed like this seems a little shell company-ish. And that's where
Also,
this conspiracies definitely start.
it's also interesting to note that the day that Steam Factory Oakland was registered in Nevada through LegalZoom was the exact same day that Bill SB 1 in Nevada was signed into law by Joe Lombardo. So it was the exact same day.
No, there's a little. I mean,
Yeah, so it's
so is this like
sort
a
of
joke?
strange. Coincidence timing.
We flash back to having this conversation with Fisher at the owners' meetings, where Jorge had brought up, "Hey, Fisher, I know that you were touring that facility, that Raiders facility. What was up with that?" And he deer in headlights moment for him, kind of was like, "Oh, yeah, it's great." And then he went into the whole facility and didn't really talk too much about like why he was there, but he admitted to being there, to having been there and touring the facility, which was always a weird thing to me. I was like, I actually never even asked Jorge about that and wondered why this baseball owner has any interest in a Raiders facility when he's moving the team to Vegas.
Well, it sounds like like the Town FC and the Roots, it seemed like they were kind of competing. It seems like the Roots really get the upper hand here, that they're going to have the big platform of the Major League Stadium. But is this kind of like an L? Like, did John Fisher take an L? Like, the fact that the Town FC kind of gets kicked aside here, because clearly there were some sort of connections, right? Like between the Town FC and John Fisher as well, right? Like.
Our weird thing was trying to figure out, because that was actually the hardest part, was figuring out like, well, what does the Town FC have to do with John Fisher? Because there was like an article about Town FC hosting Quakes 2 for a tournament or two or something like that. So we knew there was some connection, some type of like communication between the two groups, but we didn't know. We weren't sure, if that part was actually going to happen. And sure enough, that is the only thing that we know that is true. Because this last week, the Town FC came out and said that they are now the minor league team for the Quakes, and therefore Town FC is owned by John Fisher now. So it's directly tying him to trying to start or establish a soccer team in Oakland to try to compete with the Roots, which is really shady because the Roots are for sure a beloved team in Oakland. Town FC, the guy who started Town FC, was part of the Roots, and he had a not so happy exit from the team. We've also heard that he actually has been kicked off of two other teams as well in the past, so he doesn't have a great record. And anyway, so it seems to me like it's a bitter move on his part. Like he really wants to get back at the Roots. He wants to impede on their progress in Oakland and the
So he
Town
was trying.
FC.
So do you think he was trying to get that practice facility for maybe Bay FC and the Town
That,
FC? Like, because they
and
even
that's
seems like the two brands
probably,
are kind of aligned almost, the Town and the Bay. Like, I don't know.
yeah, that's probably the hardest connection in finding, and that's where we spent a lot of our time seeing if there was any connection between John Fisher. That's where the line sort of breaks as far as solid proof. But there are things, and the connection might be is there are things that John Fisher is involved in supporting it STEM organizations where he's on the board. And the connection would be it's very similar wording to some of the curriculum that Alex or Anthony Heilich of Steam Factory Oakland has put in his curriculum. So that's the loose connection. That's where you start stretching.
It's a lot of fun.
it's something.
I am very anti-conspiracy as most
but
of
also
the time.
Yeah. But the Nate Miley John Fisher connect. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, the Nate Miley John Fisher connection. There's like a paper trail, though, right? Like the A's have definitely like.
I mean, they've paid Nate Miley off in the past. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And Athletics John Fisher has paid him off, so yeah. Or he's contributed to his campaign. So,
right.
In the but, tune of like $10,000-$15,000.
But he can do that. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think what hopefully has been clear too is that your thread really sort of galvanized a lot of people to get thinking about this, to really, really start thinking about how can we let people know that we're about this. You know, at the same time, I'd been sort of kicking around with the Last Dive Bar guys, putting together this like email campaign. You know, like sometimes I'll be on Twitter and I'll see, you know, people who want to get more bike lanes or something like that. They'll say, oh, sign up. And, you know, we'll all send the city councilman, you know, 30 emails to say, hey, you know, do this, right? Because it's really hard to get people to call into meetings. It's really hard to get people to pick up the phone and call, you know, and it's only these like, you know, lunatics who have nothing better to do who go to these public meetings. So, you know, I was like, well, okay, you guys just dropped this.
These conspiracy theories. So I was gonna be like,
right, yeah. And then they go and spit those conspiracy theories. So we've been kicking around this. I figured out a website to do it. And I think off the back of that thread, you know, I put that out there and we ended up sending each person on each supervisor and every person in Nate Miley's office and everyone in the city council, they each got 2000 emails from 2000 different people. So, you know, I obviously on Outlook, you just set a thing to send these all to trash, but you know, it tells them that, hey, people are paying attention, you know. Yeah. People are paying attention in a level of government that oftentimes people aren't paying attention. There's not always that people are really plugged into the Alameda supervisors' decisions. So, you know, I think, and I even bigger than that, all these things that have been happening with the fan organizations, you know, with the reverse boycott, with the coming up boycott, with the fan fest that the Last Dive Bar and the 68s, you know, poured their blood, sweat, and tears into, you know, that really gets politicians realizing, oh, this is a constituency. These people care. So, you know, I don't know what I think. You guys might be better plugged in than Alex and I are with all of this stuff, but you know, I don't know what you can say or what you can't say, but you know, I got on Twitter, I got Casey Pratt saying everybody's super optimistic about these discussions with the A's. I got, you know, I'm hearing through the grapevine that there's multiple different groups who are expressing, you know, their want to buy the A's or buy an expansion team. We get these messages from the mayor's office that says these meetings. We had this meeting earlier this week. I want to say Wednesday or Thursday.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. They said, hey, we had a productive meeting with the A's. You know, at the same time, the mayor's always been clear that she'll only talk to them if they can promise an expansion team and to keep the name and colors. So productive meeting, and that's what clearly the owner or the mayor's position is. What should A's fans make of this?
Well, I would assume first off, productive meeting probably means the A's did not say no, screw you guys, and walk away. So that is one huge bit of productivity, because I don't know, to me, from all of the discussions I've had and it just reading all of the news, the A's desperately need that $70 million a year TV deal. Like, even who was it that was on Foul Territory the other day? that was one of the players saying like, yeah, it comes down to that TV deal. And that's from the inside the A's, like them telling their players, like, all right, the TV deal is what it is. And so
it's not a secret.
Yeah, it's not a secret. And so that and anything else is like the big question is, does John Fisher actually have $1 billion in family money to put in, or is that just a bluff? From the way he's mentioned before, it sure seems like it's a bluff. So
he's already flip-flopped twice. Like he had that. So like
within 2 days or 3 days.
Yeah. It's like he told Susan Slusser.
500 million.
Yeah, 500 million, and then from his family, 500 million for private investors. And then 2 days later, he's like, oh no, we can do $1 billion, but if we can find 500 million, that'd be great. I was like,
funny.
So you don't have a plan. He doesn't have a
plan. If you go based off of the Forbes valuation of the A's, I think they value it at 1.175 billion.
Something like that, yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's I think half of that, the value of half of that is 525 million or something. So that's it. Like to sell ownership at 500 million, you're nearly giving up half of the business to just to get that funding. And he probably doesn't own enough to have still retain full ownership at 50%, I would assume.
I think I'm not a businessman. But I can sort of I can play one with my economics degree. As long as you don't know what economics is, I can trick people into thinking I know things about business. But I assume that what he's going to say is right. The A's are worth 1.1 billion today. But tomorrow, once we built the new Sydney Opera House and are the world's most important franchise in baseball because we're in Las Vegas, as Dave Cavill likes to say, or something
dude,
like that.
We got
then we're going to be worth $3 billion. So you yes, today I'm only worth 1.1, but you're going to buy at a $3 billion valuation. Now, if anyone had said, "Oh yeah, sure, that sounds like a good deal," we wouldn't be here today, right? He hasn't found anyone who's agreed to that yet. But like, that's the line that he's giving people is, "Oh, you're going to buy in at a $3 billion valuation. Don't worry."
If that was the case, I would have so many multi-million-dollar movies made by now, but no, you got to prove that there's revenue and it's not based off of projected, like after this, we'll be worth this maybe. Like, no, what's the value now?
Yeah, and I think that's
gonna be a bank doesn't look at the future value, right?
Todd's been doing so much financial like research on all this. And he really believes that like, he can't get the loans if he doesn't have that $70 million TV deal set up for the next few years, because those loans are going to be contingent on how much he's actually making in the next year. So like, it's a big connection that like, and this is the thing that we've been trying to communicate with the Oakland, Oakland mayor's office. And I honestly believe that they are fully on board with this idea that like, he needs us, he needs Oakland a lot more than Oakland needs him at this point. They do have all the leverage in this. And I think they're playing, from everything I'm hearing from them and from people that are involved in the negotiations, there's a hard line going down from the city saying, this is what we want. We want an MLB team. So either that happens or you guys can go play somewhere else. And that hurts them a lot more than it hurts Oakland. So, and the fact that they haven't just backed off and said, okay, we're going to go to Sacramento, or fine, Sacramento's our number one option, or Salt Lake City's our number one option. I think those are big, that's a big deal that they're not just abandoning negotiations at this point. And I also will say that we've heard that the city is working to push this to MLB as well, and putting players in place to help that negotiation with MLB. I won't go too far into that, but that's what we're hearing, the basics of what we're hearing. And so it's very positive that they are going in the right direction on this, I think.
I think it's more positive than I would have predicted. I think, I think we should maybe start talking about the documentary in a second here, but You know, the you guys came over to my apartment and filmed us recording what we kind of thought was going to be our last Ricky Henderson podcast because we thought the story was over. You know, I knew that the story really wasn't completely over, but like, it just seemed like next year we're going to cause a, you know, we're going to, I thought it was a stink, but it's over, you know, it's over. And I don't want people listening to this to think, oh, we're, you know, it's back to 50-50, baby. Cause it's not back to 50-50, but, I'm shocked that people are, that John Fisher and Dave Cavill hearing the only way we can do this is if you get us an expansion team. I'm shocked that they're not saying, darn it, let's go to Sacramento, right? They had like Evan Drellich or whatever. They called Evan Drellich after it seemed like the mayor, their first meeting. It was right after their first meeting. The mayor was they're like, they probably were scared and they're like, shit, like, what do we do? And they called Evan Drellich and they said, well, it's going to be Sacramento, buddy. Print that. And no one batted an eye.
And then the next day, they had someone else doing.
Yeah, Mick Akers said that Oakland was the front runner. I talked to a number of people in Sacramento, and they're like, "Well, we heard it from this one guy, so it's like one source." I'm like, "But it confirms other things that I've heard, but it's like it had to have been a play to try and pull back leverage from Oakland." Because I honestly don't think that Sacramento is really a viable option. Because then you've got, where do the Rivercats go? Do the Rivercats leave? And then on top of that, is the stadium up to standard? How long will it take to do stadium improvements? Are they trying to play for a long-term home for the A's? And if that's the case, is there money, stadium money, which there isn't? I've heard rumors that people are saying, oh, West Sacramento and Yolo County would have funds, but none of that I've heard confirmed from anywhere. It's like no mention of that in any sort of legislation or anything that I can find, at least. So I think really Oakland has the power here.
And the TV deal is like, I think, a bigger playing point than anyone's giving it. I think he really, really needs that money. Yeah. And so it's a great leverage piece. Yes.
Yeah. One thing I think is interesting with this, I don't know, like the before it used to be, oh, the A's are a small market team, whatever, they can't afford to pay their players or whatever. But now I think the narrative has really changed where, you know, Dave Cavill and John Fisher are really being kind of scrutinized for how they've really tanked this whole thing in the past 20 years or whatever. And the most recent comments from Dave Cavill, he was in an article with Mari Brown of Forbes. You know, he's saying this is going to be the most transformative ballpark since Camden Yards, the biggest relocation since the Dodgers moved west. It's like, dude. And then and it's funny that everybody's laughing too. It's like, I don't know. I think, I just think like if anybody can mess this up, is these guys. You know, they've already messed up four different other sites as well. So, not to give.
But I said from day one.
Yeah, not to give the A's fans too much hope, but, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
that's what I was saying. Like, I really think, you know, I was in the same boat as how, you know, towards the end of last year, we were like, we got to get all this on camera because, you know, when it goes to the off season, most likely this stuff's all going to get taken care of. I mean, we had told all of our producers, like, probably by January, we'll know where this is going to go. And so we'll be able to, like, out there and, you know, it just shows the ineptitude of these guys. I mean, like, the fact that they just can't get anything right with this, I think that's the thing that's given me the most hopium is, like, sure, there are these other avenues that could destroy it, you know, the stadiums or schools over stadiums, sorry, all that stuff could affect the outcome of all this. But honestly, I just think their ineptitude at this point, and the fact that everyone knows that they are inept at this and really, you know, they're showing themselves on a national stage to be very bad at business. And that's exactly what we need, because how are you going to find investors if every news piece is negative against you and you just keep botching simple things? Even the stadium release they botched. I mean, the stadium renderings, you know, they sent it to press, and then a 10 minutes later said, oh, don't release it, and it had already been released. Like, just
yeah. And the
every
verbal rendering
thing
too. They must have been listening to the podcast, because yeah. Hal called them verbal renderings, and then people, like, I wrote about it, and other people wrote about it, and they deleted it. I was like, oh man, they're fans of the pod. That's great.
Yeah, it's nice to know that they're fans of the pod. So how many hours have you guys filmed so far for this documentary, and how many hours do you think you'll end up?
It's gonna be a mini series, I think.
It's honestly feeling like, you know, and as we start to put these other pieces with these other sports teams coming involved now into the kind of the story of sorts, I think we have probably 30 or 40 hours of footage at this point. We'll probably have twice that at least, which I mean honestly is not that common for a documentary. I think we'll eventually want to go and redo or do a lot more interviews in a very professional environment. We're going to be trying to bring on a production company in the next couple months. You know, the story has become a national level story. So we are going to go back out to production companies and get a big hitter involved in this that can help us fund the rest of it. Although I think the stuff that we're really trying to capture right now is the stuff that's happening, the on the ground stuff that you can't go back in the future.
Right.
And get, like that, you know, that stuff's important for a doc, but you also want it to look a certain, you know, have a certain pedigree to it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for us, we want to do those big interviews at some point with a lot of big people as well. Not only the people that like you guys that we've been following in the doc, but also heavy hitters from different parts of the media, MLB. Those are big.
Celebrity supporters.
And
Tom
like
Hanks, you can come in and pretend to be a hot dog guy. You can call yourself Hal.
if you interview Tom Hanks, I want to be hired to do the what's it, the guy who does food on set. I want to just be there making hot dogs.
Well, didn't they put Tom Hanks's head on your cutout or something like
yeah,
that?
Of course. They called me like 12 hours before the first game. They were like, hey, do you mind that we did this? And I was like, yeah, it's fine. I asked if I could keep the Tom Hanks cutout afterwards, and they never got back to me on it.
But I think these fan stories, you know, going back to like the idea of the doc, I think these fan stories are becoming a bigger thing in media and in documentaries. One of the guys who is one of our head producers was a co-creator of the show Welcome to Wrexham, and that show has really spurned on you know, a lot of this interest in fan-based movements and fans. The importance in fans getting their teams and representing their teams, and kind of Oakland is this perfect place to tell this story. And you know, this movement has been very, you know, it's historical. It really is a historical movement at this point. So I think it's a perfect story that should be getting out there to all the big streamers, and should have a pretty good market for it once it comes out. You know, the idea at first was a documentary. Who knows? It could even end up being a 2 or 3 part series even. So
I saw Netflix bought a documentary that hasn't even been made yet. I guess
Brewers?
That's probably how things work. I don't know about the
Expos. Yeah. Yeah. I had concerns because they, because that was like, maybe they're ones that's not super connected and afraid of an MLB put in the bad in a bad light, and because they also signed to do a team follow show with the Red Sox, and so they're doing like a Welcome to Wrexham style Red Sox show. Then the Expos documentary was announced, and I was like, oh good, maybe there's a chance. And so that at least a bigger one with a little bit more money is willing to take a risk on something that may not show MLB in the best light. But it's funny because you were saying that maybe a 3-part series or something. The first thing that I started when I interviewed you, Hal, way back in it was July last year.
Yeah, it's like a month after.
Yeah, it was exactly a month, July 13th, I believe. I was like, all right, I'm going to do like a 3 to 4 minute video just to get it out there, and we've got it. Here we are 30 hours of footage later, and Gabe and I working together, and 3 minutes is not long enough. So
yeah, obviously going to be injured Doc. You know, that's still our focus. But you know, as you guys are saying, as this continues to go on, and the drama keeps coming up in all these different weird ways, it's giving us more and more story to report on and to talk about. So,
yeah, I was worried. So Jared, you know, approached me right after the reverse boycott, you know, and so I was kind of worried. I was like, oh, you know, too bad. You know, and he said, hey, I want to do this thing about the reverse boycott. It was such an amazing moment. And I want to just make a short sort of movie about it. And that was before Gabe, you were even involved. And, you know, there was part of me that was a little bit bummed. I was like, he should have, you know, he missed all the best parts. He should have talked to us, you know, before that. But, you know, it's just exploded since then. Can you guys kind of talk about, I don't know if you can or not, but like how much interest you'd gotten from, I have no idea how any of this works, but like how much interest you've sort of gotten from the people that need to fund things or, you know, to support things at the beginning, and like how much you have now.
So this has been kind of the interesting thing with Jared and I, and why when we came together, it was kind of a perfect match, because Jared went about it differently than I did. Jared started by being like, this is incredible. I need to get footage now. I need to get, you know, start getting interviews, start going to games and getting footage of the games and what's happening at the games. Whereas I was like, well, I want to try and get some big hitters involved. And I'd love to get like a big production company to back this, because I think it's going to be a great story. And I had a ton of interest on my end. Like I said, we have a couple producers, one of them, one of the Welcome to Wrexham guys. We also did pitch it to a couple of companies. Our focus at first was going to baseball companies or sports documentary companies. And I think actually that ended up being the issue, because although it's a great sports story, it's a story that is most likely going to paint MLB in a bad way. And MLB is known in Hollywood as the most litigious of any sports organization out there. They will sue anyone for anything. So, you know, there is a bit of danger that a sports company has to take on to do this. You do need to have a whole team of lawyers that can figure out if you can get fair use for certain baseball footage, what can be shown, what can't be shown, what are you going to get sued about, and then get an insurance company to back that up, basically, is what you do for this type of doc. But it's, you know, it can be expensive to do that. And also, we directly heard from these companies. They were like, we love this story. We really, really love the story. But this not only could affect us on your guys' project, but we're a sports doc company. We need all these other stories. We need MLB on our team. So we can't, it's too much of a risk for us. So, you know, going forward in the next round of pitches to companies, we're really going to be starting to go for companies that are more about human interest stories, that are more about uprisings or, you know, protest movements and things like that. Because that's actually kind of the heart of this story. Although it has a backbone of baseball, it really is about the fans who have, you know, done this David and Goliath story of, you know, confronting owners in a sport that was never, you know, that's never been done like this before. So to me, that's the heart of the story, and that's how we're going to be pitching it going forward. And yeah, I'm very optimistic that we'll get someone, a decent sized company, or maybe even a streamer or someone that actually releases footage to get behind us on this. So
Amazon Prime, baby. No.
For sure. So, you know, it's exciting. I think there's a good chance that this story is going to be told the right way, and told on a bigger level and put through a big platform to be seen by everyone, because it really is a movement that should be seen by everyone. It's pretty incredible what you guys have been doing. I mean, really, Jared and I continue to say this, you know, we're making this story because of you guys, because of what you guys were all doing. You know, yeah, you were on the ground much earlier than we were. We were motivated by what was happening in Oakland that you guys were on the front lines of. So, you know, really it's about you guys and what you've done. So, you know, thank you for everything that you've done. And we're just excited to keep telling the story and keep following you.
Yeah, that was one thing that Gabe and I talked about before we go, I was very concerned. Like, we have to make sure the fans' story, it's told from the fans' perspective, and they're represented well. And Gabe's like, yeah, of course, 100%. And I'm like, okay, I guess that means there's no excuse of why we can't work together and combine forces. But that's been a huge thing, is it, like you were, like Gabe was saying, it's the fan story. We just happen to be facilitating this sharing of it and helping to get it to as many people as possible. So,
yeah. So I'm assuming you guys will be there at the opening day tailgate. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that should be, yeah, I'm really excited for that. That should be fun. And, but I mean, what's like the next thing in the timeline? Is it the April 2nd meeting between the A's in Oakland again, when they meet again to talk about the lease? Do you feel like that's like the next big milestone A's fans should be kind of paying attention to, or what else should fans be paying attention to, you know, coming up? Because there's so many moving parts to this thing, you know?
I mean, I think we have an exciting year ahead, to be honest. I mean, we haven't figured out, I mean, none of the groups I think have figured out the full schedule of events this year, basically, but you know, there's a lot of cool ideas for, you know, doing some boycott games that can take people to go to the Ballers instead or go to the Roots instead, so that we get, you know, we get a huge contingent of people that would usually be A's fans going and experiencing something that's still Oakland based and Oakland fan based and still has that passion. I mean, I got this at one of the Roots games and it was incredible going there. Everything that I loved about an A's game, and I'm not a huge soccer fan, but everything I loved about the A's game, that passion, the drums, the chants, all of that is at the Roots. Is, you know, it's part of Oakland more than it is a part of baseball necessarily. And so that it's pretty cool to see that passion still going forward in different teams. And so I'm excited to see that with the Ballers, Roots, Soul.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, you got anything else, Al, or what?
Who would be, so like, you know, within reason, right? Because I don't think you're going to get Dave Cavill or John Fisher to sit for this documentary. But hey, like, I mean, right? I mean,
John Fisher for this documentary. How we interviewed him at the MLB owners meeting.
I did reach out to Rob Manfred. And he responded, said, I'm not interested in participating. And so my response back was, okay, cool. Well, if you ever change your mind, we're always on a full perspective. So I'll get in contact with you again in the future. So,
yeah. Anyway, but like, okay, so who would be like within reason? I mean, maybe you don't want to say, but like within reason, like who would be your dream interview for this? Like, is it like top sports journalists, like the national MLB journalists, or
having like a Ken Rosenthal or Passan in it would be great.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
I'd be more interested, I think, in getting somebody that's in the front office, sitting in on those meetings, because truth be told, like reaching out to some of these media professionals and like big names in the media, it's not as difficult as you might think, because them appearing in something like this gives them even more credibility and pushes their brand further. It maybe helps them out more than it helps us out to do it. I would think, because I'm maybe that's naive thinking, but I feel like the hard one that could be really pivotal is somebody on the inside. I don't know.
Okay, it is Dave Cavill is the person that you want.
And who knows? Maybe he's smart enough to want to sit down with us. Today's opposite day.
We know. Request to try to get, I mean, that has definitely been a big thing for Jeremy. We have continually tried to push, like, anyone who works for the A's who has insider knowledge of this, like, we would love to hear your story, and we have all the ways set up to make you anonymous still. You know, shoot this in a way in which you won't be, your job will not be at stake. We will do everything to protect you. But that's an important story to hear that inside, you know, what's really happening in those meetings.
Maybe
I,
Newsom
who
would be an
knows?
interesting one. I don't know how that would connect, but it might be. So,
Who'd you say? Sorry.
Newsom, Governor
Oh yeah,
Newsom,
the yeah.
that could be an interesting
Well,
approach.
Tom Hanks would be pretty good. Tom
I mean,
Hanks
Tom
would be
Hanks is one of
good.
I'm going for like a dream person that, but he doesn't really have much to do with the movement. He would just kind of give us a. It would be
Great
amazing if Tom
EO.
Hanks talked about
It'd bring eyeballs for sure,
that would
yeah.
be incredible.
Like, did you see the movie The Saints Who Saved Summer? It's a Netflix one, but it had Charlie Day from Sunny in Philly was playing Mike Vinichek or whatever, the White Sox. His dad was the White Sox owner or
Bill
something like
Veeck?
that.
Was it Bill Veeck
So it's
or? Oh,
Charlie Day.
it was Bill Vex. It's
Bill
Vec.
Vec.
It Bill Vec's son, Mike
Yeah.
Vec.
And then Jeff
I
Daniels was
haven't
the
seen the movie.
narrator.
I just have. I just know a lot about Bill
Yeah. Well, you
Vec.
know, your rookie cards, isn't it the White Sox? I've got it here
Got a Howl
somewhere.
rookie card. I love Better Bastards of Baseball. That's like one of my favorite documentaries ever. That's a great documentary. Oh
Good pick.
wow, a
Look at
Howl
that.
rookie card.
There it is.
Is that
There it
on the,
is.
if you go on Beckett.com, can you see how much that worth or what? Are you
I haven't looked it up. I just keep
it's
it very nice because it's signed.
worth four hot dogs.
But yeah, one other thing I wanted to say before we ended this, and Hal, it was something that you were talking about earlier. You know, I think one of the things that Jared and I constantly want to encourage people to do is to get out there and make your voice heard. Because, you know, it's easy to think, no one's gonna listen. City council is gonna just do their politics. The board of supervisors for the county is gonna do what they wanna do. But in all honesty, our voices are incredibly important. And it's showing how much of a change we can make in sending in those letters, those emails, calling city council people, calling any government that body that is working on this deal. You know, those are votes to them. And honestly, like we can our votes mean something, and they know that. That's why the city council is working so hard for us, because the fans of Oakland have shown how powerful they can be, and they are a huge group. It's a very big group. So please continue to fight this year. Continue to make your voices heard. Continue to do emails, to contact the board of supervisors. We'll keep, you know, Alex, you were asking specifically like what the next thing is. I think there is a vote, but I'm actually not exactly sure when it is. But Jared and I have one of our big things outside of this documentary is to continue giving people the information so that they can go make their voices heard. So that's what we're going to be hopefully doing as much as we can. And then everyone just keep doing what you're doing, because it is making a difference. I guarantee it is. It's not only changing the narrative on a national level, which is important for this movement, but also for Oakland, but it's also changing how politicians are thinking about where to put their votes and things. So
It's definitely changing politics. You know, it without 28,000 people coming to the reverse boycott, you know, without 10 or 15,000 people coming to Fans Fest, without, you know, all this stuff, these politicians wouldn't think that it's important. They don't view it, you know, they don't view it as something that's important. You know, when Cavill and Fisher were in charge of the A's trying to get this stadium done. In Ho Howard Terminal, they never activated the fans, and there were a lot of politicians who just felt like this is just a thing that's important to this billionaire who wants to get a stadium, and it's important to some corporate interests, and it's important to a bunch of white people who live out in Dublin and who live out in Walnut Creek, you know, who drive in for a game and drive out, you know, and it just wasn't that high of a priority. You know, it's now it's still not it's still you know it's never going to be the highest priority of these people, but at this point, these politicians view this as an opportunity to get a win, an opportunity to show that they're tough and they're fighting for their city. Where I think before, a lot of times these politicians thought this is an annoyance that I have to deal with this. You know, now they want to deal with it. So come out to the boycott, you know, be loud at the boycott, you know, blare your horn in the fifth inning.
That's going to be the coolest moment. That's going to be something.
Yeah, I think we're going to hopefully hear more from schools over stadiums. Give money to schools over stadiums. Everything that you do matters. Everything that you participate in matters. The A's are still probably going to be in Las Vegas, but like we're going to get, you know, we might get an expansion team out of this. The B's wouldn't exist without this. You know, who knows if the Roots would even have gotten the Coliseum without all this. You know, people realize that people are watching. So keep fighting, everybody.
And if you really want a monetary item, go to lastdivebar.com and buy a print of the photo neglected child, and all profits go to schools over stadiums.
There you go.
Yeah.
And use the code RickyBlock for 10% off. We are now affiliate partners with the Last Dive Bar. I love it.
There you go. Link in the description.
Subscribe here. No. All right, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, Gabriel Colon, Jared Isham, thank you guys so much. Hopefully, what, 2030 we'll see this documentary? I don't know. Something like that? I don't know.
I'm not putting any timetable on it at this point.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, make sure to follow them. The Summer of Cell documentary on their social media channels. Because it's more, I mean, yeah, it's more than just this footage. It's like you guys are, you know, really digging into this stuff and really getting in the weeds here. So, it's been really cool to see. So, all right, guys, we'll all see each other on opening day, the 28th, at the Coliseum parking lot.
Looking forward.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great night.
Appreciate it.
All right.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.